Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Tuesday. It is the 26th of July in the year 2005. I hope you had a nice day, folks. It was up in the high 90s here today, and I don't know, the humidity, it felt like about 140%, but we had a storm this evening, and it seems to have cooled off, and that's a blessing. We talk about the weather a lot, don't we? It is the weather, whether we like it or not. Basically, that's what it is, because it's being controlled and modified, and they're causing, the controllers are causing a lot of problems for people, besides health problems, destroying the farms, and just probably having fun with their little game. Anyway, Alan is back with us tonight. We were, just before we went off the air last night, he had mentioned something that sparked a conversation we had had. I thought it was very intriguing, and I thought that you folks would like to hear what he said. We've talked about this before somewhat. The plan, if you would, the ultimate plan, according to what Alan says, is to actually literally recreate the physical human body and simply have a unisex individual, a hermaphrodite. I guess that's, I don't know if you would call it unisex or what, Alan, what would you call it?
It's the end product of supposedly the next great leap forward, which is to create two in one. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you call that unisex?
In a sense, it'll be a true bisexual. Yeah.
A true one, because it will have both female and male organs.
Yes.
We talked about that. I want to share our spiritual message here before we go further. This is from the Course in Miracles, folks, from the text, page 278. The Holy Spirit will, of himself, fill every mind which so makes room for him. If you are trusting in your own strength, you have every reason to be apprehensive, anxious, and fearful. And ultimately, it is our strength, because we are one with our Father, aren't we, folks? Alan, thanks for that. Well, when we were talking the other night, and you got talking about this, what they're already capable of doing, can we kind of repeat that conversation?
Yeah, it's the oddest thing is to, when you go back into ancient history, and Plato, for instance, talked about, and now these are allegories for something to come rather than something that was, but so he refers to the deity or the creator or the god that they secretly worshipped, the aristocracy of Greece, and he refers to it as being both male and female, male in the front and female behind, and it's almost a joking way of putting it across, that rather than walk, the thing actually sort of did rolls or handstands, and that's how it moved. And it, the way that he continued this conversation was to say that eventually the deity separated the male from the female, but not all of them, he said, were male and female. He said sometimes it was a male in front and a male behind. And
I don't understand. What does that mean, a male in front and a female behind?
Well, that's what he was saying, was that there weren't all male and female. Some of them were male both ways. And he was using this allegory for the fact that so many Greek aristocracy, well, most of them actually, were homosexual. And he said they were looking for their soulmate. And so he used a story to validate their lifestyle, you might say. So he said that's why the aristocracy was actually involved in pedophilia, really, because they were searching out their soulmates. And of course, the nobility, including Plato himself,
and their soulmate would be male. Yes,
that's what he was getting at. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the Greek nobility shared an awful lot in common with the Egyptian nobility, in that they all believed in reincarnation, but they also believed that the spirit or the soul itself, this big difference between the soul and spirit, according to Plato, that the soul itself was not gender neutral. It actually was male or female. So they believed they came back each time as males, you see. And because the other part that was split off from them eons before that was what they were searching for, and supposedly that gave them the right to have sexual interaction with young boys. But the odd thing, again,
what?
We jump from that even to the writings in the Talmud, and in Jewish folklore, which comes from much, much older cultures, they also believed the same thing, that the deity was both male and female. Therefore, he made Adam in the same image, the perfect likeness, the perfect sameness, meaning that Adam was initially both male and female, and that the real fall came when the female was separated out of Adam.
Well, it says in there, male and female created he them.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, you know, what that particularly meant. Created he them.
Yeah.
Male and female.
And of course, it's in translation that you start to see the differences. But in actual Greek, the word that's used for this perfect sameness is. Imagio or image, and that actually comes from the term which you use to describe the shell of an insect. When you open the shell of an insect, the cocoon, you get the perfect image inside that cocoon of the creature that lived inside of it. And so, in other words, the initial Adam was the perfect sameness as the deity, meaning he also had the same powers and everything. And then the female was separated eventually from him, and that's when he lost his power. However, in all masonry and pre-Judaic, pre-Hebrew, this was already accepted in Egyptian culture and in the Greek, ancient Greek culture, was that when Eve was separated, or the female was separated, the male retained the spirit, and the female simply retained the right to reproduce her own kind on the earth.
That
and
was
that's still true
that was
of higher masonry today. That's why Albert Pike and Mackay and others all said that the female can only reflect, like the moon, she can only reflect her husband's glory, who is the sun. He has spirit, that's what it means.
That sounds like a friend of mine from during the time we were campaigning for Boat Rights.
Uh-huh.
He was one of those hellfire and brimstone guys,
mm-hmm.
and he loved Paul. And in the Old Testament, he called himself a Christian. And he was a divorcee, and he said to me one day, it was a shame that, no, that was about me. It's a shame that so many good people are going to go to hell. But it was talking about his wife and daughter. He said, God is no longer in that home. And when I asked him what he meant, he said, the male is the Godhead. And when I left that home, God left. And let me tell you what's really pathetic about it. He said it not as if he really believed that he would be in pain for his wife and daughter. But he said it in a real holier-than-thou and superior attitude. Like, he thought it was cool.
Well, this is an ancient belief. As I say, Masonry today has simply adopted the much older religion or mystery religion that flows through all the ancient cultures and the aristocracies, right, as I say, back to Egypt and even back to Sumer. So this is an ancient belief, hidden belief in the secret societies, which still is ongoing today, that's the big secret, is that Eve basically has no spirit. She is mother, which is matter. I mean, even the language supports this belief system. So she can only reproduce matter, whereas the male is the initiator of life. The female then takes over and reproduces. But her world is the world of matter. That's what they believe. Mother, matter. You know. So that's why, again,
male superiority going on.
Star are fooling themselves, and all the other many branches of female side degrees that were put in there simply to get the females on board, as they say. But Pike and Mackay and others all state that, plus the Carus Coronati Lodge in England, which is the main historical lodge of research for Masonry. They all say the same thing, that these are simply show degrees and don't contain the secrets.
That's right.
Yeah. But getting back to the hermaphrodite, it's so odd that all priesthoods down through the ages have taken the same route of primarily recruiting males.
The what males?
They've taken to recruiting mainly males to be priests.
Oh, uh-huh.
It wasn't until the Protestant so-called revolution, which wasn't the revolution at all. It was already planned by the same side. There's only one side in everything. And that's when they started bringing the families, you might say, the male and the female, into the church. But even so, it's still retained by the male, all the authority within the church. Or at least it used to be, you know. But in the Catholic Church, it still holds to that effect. And of course, in most other cultures, such as the Muslim and so on, it's still the reins of power are still in the muftis, the priests. You know.
Yeah. You know what I heard that is probably so?
Yeah.
When God created man, she was only kidding.
Sometimes I wonder, because it certainly seems to be a joke. You know?
Yeah, it's a joke.
Yeah.
It is like...
But Noah, this is an ancient goal, was to reach perfection, as they say. And...
Well, these are weirdos, Alan. I mean, we're talking about some real weirdos here, let's face it. I mean,
yes,
you know,
real weirdos with the power and the system
to bring about what their dream is.
Money. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm saying, though, is that just because it's such an ancient held belief, I'm not saying that it isn't a possibility that, you know, in, quote, the beginning, when they were first genetically engineering the human body, maybe there were hermaphrodites, but where this thing about the soul comes in, I mean, that's just idiocy. But we're dealing here with some real idiots, and I don't mean idiots in the manner of not being educated or being stupid. I mean, they're idiots. They're They're out of this world, Alan.
Yeah, well, you can certainly have idiots, but the problem is they're idiots with power, and that's scary.
Yeah,
you know?
You bet it is. Idiots with power.
Yeah.
Idiots and, with power.
When you go, again, going back to the ancient mystery religions, like the Roman equestrian order, that was the high nobility order, we had so much in common with what we think of as the Old Testament, which is just a conglomeration of the mystery religion as it already existed in all different peoples. The equestrian order used to pitch a roofless tent in a field, and the novices would come in there for their initiation, and they did definitely have a sexual anal intercourse with what was then the Grand Master.
Uh-huh.
And then when you jump forward to
so they're perverts and
queers, you find the same thing was charged against them, that they were indulging in sexual intercourse with each other, and that is validated by a lot of different sources, including John Dee, who did his best to cover up for them, but he did say that that was one of the main charges which could not be denied. And we must remember they were also a priesthood. They were a priesthood, and that was quite common amongst priesthoods.
Yeah.
You know, hold on a second, there's a train going from China.
Yeah, I can hear it.
There we go.
Is that the Chinese train?
Yeah. So what you find is, here's an interesting statement that the Dalai Lama made when he was asked, not too long after he'd moved out of Tibet in the 50s and went to Europe, he was asked what he thought of homosexuality. And he started to answer in the traditional Tibetan cultural stance, and then he checked himself and to realize it was now in a new country with different views. And he said, well, if it doesn't break the vows of chastity, then it isn't sexual intercourse at all. In other words, to everybody's way of thinking, sexual intercourse is traditional between male and female, therefore it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Whatever men do amongst men.
You know, a lot of that...
thing altogether.
A lot of that...
And that was a traditional excuse down through the ages amongst all male priesthoods.
A lot of that stuff is right out of the Talmud, in the Talmud,
yeah,
that you're talking about. You know, they're these stupid things. For example, a man could not have intercourse. It had something to do with a non-Jew, if it was done in the normal way, it said, then it was not okay. But as long as it was done abnormally, it wasn't considered adultery.
Yeah. So in other words, it's the old story of changing perspective
by
the use of different words.
Yep.
And that's very, very common. But the Knights Templars, in their different statements in different countries, did say the same thing, that they were sworn as brothers to alleviate each other's sexual needs.
It's really
so all this hoopla about the wonderful Knights Templars and the Red Cross on their chest and they were heroes. We have to really look at it as it was. It was vastly different from the way it's portrayed in Hollywood. It was a priesthood first, and there were warriors second.
Don't they mention in the Old Testament the dog priests?
That's right. But all of the cultures, that's what you'll find in all the histories of all the peoples.
Right.
The same organization existed everywhere. And the traditionally in all temples, and Israel was no exception, at least the Israel that we know of did exist about 500 or 400 BC, it was no exception, and the archaeologists have proved this. When you went to the temple, affixed to the temple at the front door, there was always the hall of prostitutes where you would have women have ritual intercourse generally with a prostitute.
A female?
That was the generative power. That was part of the process.
A female, you mean?
a female, but they also saw one on the other side of the main entrance, and that has a male standing there. And so that it led off there for the males if you wanted a male instead. And that was the same in Egypt and Greece, all over.
Well, let's bring this back to today. Let's bring it back to today.
Yeah.
If we could, because you were telling me that they have already announced it in scientific journals, etc., that they're able to create hermaphrodites today.
Yes. Oh, yeah. In fact, NASA
genetically,
did a 2-hour documentary special, and it was narrated by David Suzuki, who does the wildlife programs generally, and he's a geneticist actually. But they've talked about going off to mine the planets. So you can imagine the cost of tin eventually if they're going off to mine the planets. But they said it might take many years to get to a planet, and the first thing they'd have to do is just like the old Star Trek series, they'd have to build underground quarters for living accommodations. But they said the trip would take so long that they'd have to alter the human body, perhaps into the hermaphroditic type, which is self-reproducing, and can also be put into a state of hibernation. And of course, what they were getting at as well was that there'd be less tension by having the same species, just one type, no male and female in conflict or competition with each other,
and they could
other males,
and they could reproduce themselves.
Yes, that's the whole idea.
Okay, well, we were talking.
And they said that they could actually do that, and in fact, they said they could make a human to be, and they could alter a human to live in any type of terrain or climate, and they could actually make you like Cousin It, if you imagine. Cousin It was in the, what do you call that program it used to be on? The Addams Family.
Okay.
It was covered in hair.
I don't know. I didn't watch The Addams Family.
Yeah. So if you went into an Arctic type region, they could literally create a type of humanoid, and they can do it. They said that it would be covered with its own fur. They can do that. And
this was a NASA presentation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was a big. They spared no expense, naturally, because this is all to get the public to accept the vast expenditures into space research. And of course, Joe Average has been geared up and brainwashed into supporting it and thinking it's exciting, when in reality, it has nothing to do with Joe Average. It's only the plan of a small elite for the benefit of a small elite and for the furtherance of their plan, which is to basically do on other planets what they've done here on Earth. Suck the life out of it, basically. So, they said that the hermaphrodite can be made. So they obviously have plans to do it, since they admit they can do it.
Well,
I have no doubt they've been testing. We know, for instance, that long before the double helix and the genes and so on were actually physically seen, they knew they were there. And if you read Rutherford, who was the great mathematician who did the dimensions of the Great Pyramid, Rutherford in his own memoirs said that he was employed by the World Medical Association. This is the beginning of the 1900s. He's talking about a World Medical Association. And he said to study human genes. Now, why would you need a mathematician to study human genes around 1910, when supposedly they couldn't even see the genes by then? He's giving it away that they could. They were way, way ahead of what we're told. And I'm sure the experimentation has been going on for an awful long time, and that's why they're so confident they can create anything they want.
I had a question that mm-hmm. you explained. We were talking about the chromosomes, the X and the Y chromosomes.
Yeah.
And I had to be refreshed on that. The woman carries the X, the male carries the Y. And in a male-female mating, if it's an X chromosome that mixes with hers, it's going to be a girl. But other words, wise, if it's a Y and an X, it's going to be a male. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's okay. Right. And, of course, that's part of the mystery, too, that they've always known that the male produces in his sperm both X and Y.
Oh, and the female only produces the X.
That's right.
Oh, that's interesting. And so my question...
So when the male Y, and of course the letter Y in Freemasonry means two and one. Two into one.
Yes, and X...
That's why they have such a big to-do about the letter Y. Every letter in the alphabet means something in Masonry.
Yes, and the X really,
the X
literally could mean X'd out.
You write off or discard.
Yeah, like the X generation.
That's right.
Or like you said, X, the former.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my question was, in my mind, that I asked you, how in the world does it reproduce? This creature would have to have, of course, the male testes. It would have to have a female uterus. And that was where I was feeling confused. But you explained maybe what you knew or what at least you figured could happen.
Yeah, I mean, we are in a scientific age where they can literally extract anything from anybody.
I know, but in a natural way, how would they reproduce? In other words,
well,
they wouldn't...
Well, that would be a new natural way, you see.
Okay, no. Okay. Oh, yeah, I know. Okay.
That would be the new natural.
The new natural.
And, of course, they don't even external organ to do it. They can simply extract it and... replant it, you might say, in another area.
Or right up there.
It won't be that difficult. And since they say that they can do it, it means they've already done it.
Exactly. And it's actually, it could stay exactly where it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it, just retract, you know, the outward appendages. But, my question was, would they have to have sexual intercourse in order to do it? And you said that probably not.
Probably not. And I don't think they'd actually want that. I think they'd rather eliminate the sexual desire altogether.
So they would create this creature to where it would somehow get a sperm connected up with an egg.
Yeah.
I mean, the body would have to be built somehow where it could be released.
Mm-hmm.
Or something. Yes, Alan?
Yeah, it could be, or again, once again, it could be extracted even.
You mean by outer means, by somebody else doing it. I have a feeling...
Or even a machine.
Whatever. But I have a feeling, I don't know why, but if they're going to do this, they're going to try to make it so it'll all happen without having, you know, to plug in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That there will be... Maybe they wouldn't like that, though. They would lose some control, wouldn't they, Alan?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I can see the day coming. And they've written about this, too. Like there's a book called Future Man, and I got the ISB and the authors and so on in, I think it's the second book that I put out. But that's an official scientific book by various genetic research organizations, and it goes through a lot of this information. And they do. They've had huge meetings about, international meetings about creating new types of humans to meet the scientific requirements of a scientific age. And
I can't imagine. Hold your thought, because we're about to take a break.
Awesome.
And I'm just going to repeat what I said the other night. I can't imagine this world without women.
Yeah.
We'll be back, folks, right after this with Alan Watt. In this intriguing conversation.
Yeah.
It seemed like that music played for quite a while, didn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to cut us off so quickly.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dough.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes I forget to mention this. And as I said, and I still haven't done it, if you have sent a donation and it was a personal check and you think maybe it got lost, it didn't. I am about 2.5 months behind in getting the donations that you've sent off to WWCR. And so I wanted you to know that. I want to thank each and every one of you who are helping to support the broadcast. And just because I'm getting behind in getting that over there doesn't mean that maybe you should wait until you see your canceled check coming in, because I've been really pretty tied up the last couple of months, folks, and just haven't got to it. Anyway, let me give you my address once again. It's $140 an hour to do this broadcast, and I know that we're right at $5,500 to $6,000 behind, just because I keep a almost somewhere up in my computer there a running tally. And so we are behind on our airtime bill. Please remember, if you would like to see the broadcast continue, then your participation is necessary. My address, once again, is Jackie Petrou, P-A-T-R-U. The address is P.O. Box 190, Millerton, and that is M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. It's P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. And we're back with Alan Watt, and we're talking about, folks, if this sounds really way out there to you, it's only because it is. And yet, Alan, in the books that he has done, provides, as he was saying before the broadcast, the actual pages from these books where they're talking about it. And the clues are there. And it's interesting, Alan, that not too long after we talked about this the first time on the air, uh-huh, and I would think it was probably a few years ago, there was a big documentary on one of the channels. I have C-band satellite, so I don't, you know, get all the mainstream, but HBO or one of those, and it was on hermaphrodites.
Yeah.
And it was about, people who were born. And yet, in this documentary, for the most part, the parents either had them turned in from one or the other sex. But basically, there's an organization of hermaphrodites. Mm-hmm. And what they were saying, these are people who didn't have the change, that they're who they are and what they are is just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, if that isn't getting people ready to accept this, I don't know what is.
Well, we're in tremendous flux right now. Everything that was natural or seemed natural is in flux now. It's
yes.
deliberately made so. And of course, this has been written about by various organizations, including the communists, of course. They said a time would come where the Western civilizations would almost crumble and be ready to be born anew into another direction. And that's what's happening. It's everything that used to be valued as normal has been totally broken down. And the Masons have terms for it where they build, in the Middle Ages, they build churches, huge cathedrals. And as they were building a new one, they were dismantling the old at the same time.
Yes.
That's why they call themselves Masons, the society they build. And that has been under attack for a long time, especially since World War II. That was the first change when they put the women into the workforce as an excuse that the men were off to war. And then, of course, it was followed by massive campaigns to get women into the workforce continuously. And in Europe, they played it out there as that they had to get it for extras to supplement her husband's pay. And then it became a co-standard, and now, as you know, it's the norm. So women have been encouraged to give up that one outstanding and unique feature that they have, which is to have children, and they give it up at the expense of their own psychological health, and the detriment of the people, of course, in order to get a career,
because they think they have to.
All encouraged deliberately. So, we had the sexual revolution. We must remember the term was revolution. We had the pop revolution, then the rock revolution. So all of this came at the same time, and the drug revolution, to destroy that which was, in order to prepare the way for that which is to come, which is the new society, which is already planned by people you'll never see.
Yes, and you know a thought that occurred to me,
mm-hmm.
which is a little frightening, because, okay, I guess what I'm doing is stepping into their shoes,
mm-hmm.
the people, the children who are brought up into this, quote, new society.
Uh-huh.
Everything is so normal to them. What we call normal and what is normal in our minds
mm-hmm.
may have been given us as normal.
That's right.
Okay, do you see what I'm saying, Alan?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, everything that isn't what seems normal, natural, I would have to say natural, but then again, we don't know how much genetic tinkering, even with our food and the flowers and all the plant, everything.
Inoculations even.
Well, yes. But genetic tinkering, I'm talking with everything that to us is natural today.
Of course.
And so if that is a possibility, I guess what I'm saying is stepping into their shoes, anything else other than as it is would seem abnormal.
Sure, and especially with the massive indoctrination that they get at school.
Yes.
Which actually begins at kindergarten.
Was it?
The whole sociological program towards what they will eventually experience in their lifetime and the changes which they will come when they hit 30 or 40 and how they will react to it. That's programmed into them as soon as they're 2 years old at kindergarten in Europe.
What was the movie, not 1984, but, you know, where they had the incubator babies and things like that?
It's a future shock or
no.
Aldous Huxley's book,
Aldous
Brave New World.
Thank you, Brave New World.
Yeah.
There was something I wanted to say about that, and I've forgotten what it was, trying to remember what the heck the name of the book was. Just go ahead and continue, Alan.
Yeah, well, again, that's a good example because...
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember. Remember the people who didn't succumb to the system? Who were living far away. That was in Brave New World, wasn't it? They called them the savages.
Yes.
And I remember these women sitting around saying, oh, my God, you're saying that they actually give birth to a baby from their body, because in that time it was all the bottle. What do you call them, from the bottles?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what could happen today. It truly is.
Well, there's been a lot of movies like that. Sylvester Stallone did one movie where he's a cop who goes into the future through cryogenics. He's frozen and wakes up in the future, and he finds out they don't have sexual intercourse and exchange bodily fluids. They use that term, you know. And I think it was the actress that played his opposite there looked disgusted that actually used to use they literally mingle their bodies and their bodily fluids together.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So this has been, they've got this across in so many different ways, because all fiction is simply predictive programming, as Tavistock calls it. It prepares our minds to accept something which we will experience in our lifetime.
Uh-huh.
And because we saw it through fiction, it seems familiar and the idea isn't so horrible. That's why it's portrayed this way.
And as you were saying, Alan, when we were having this conversation previously,
mm-hmm.
And I always wish when we have those kinds of conversations we're actually doing it on the air, but what you were saying, you see, because in my mind it was difficult to imagine how a man would want to not be with a woman, or that a woman would accept, you know, that type of a thing. And
mm-hmm.
it's as you said, the women are already giving up the femininity of what a woman is.
Absolutely, yeah.
They're giving it up. And
yeah,
so that
Carl Jung wrote a book called Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, and a few other books. He was the psychiatrist that really was a true psychiatrist as opposed to Freud, who was a fraud. And Carl Jung did a visit to the States in about 1953, and he was astounded. He said, when women lose their eros, their femininity, and begin to emulate the males, then he said that culture is on the decline to things unknown. He said he saw that for the first time in America back in the 50s,
where
women literally tried to match the men in their strides, in the way that they walked, their gestures, and also even emulating the kind of speech that men generally used. So he saw it being portrayed right in front of his eyes in the United States.
Uh-huh.
So that's true. When a culture loses its eros, it's ready for anything that their masters plan for it.
Well,
because there's nothing to hold on to.
Exactly.
You only fight for that which is. When it's already in flux and it is not what it was, then there's nothing to fight for, you see. And that's the trick of this whole system. It's so slick, so clever, that as we watch things changing, we are automatically adapting to them. We're being downloaded with propaganda on a daily basis from so many sources that by the time we realize what's happening, it's already too late. And it's almost overwhelming. We also have to realize that the men
have been feminized.
Have their sperm counts taken every year by the UN. They do surveys. Now, the UN has never declared why they're doing these surveys on the Western countries.
Wowie.
Since the 1950s. And last year, the sperm count in the average Western male, including America, actually in Britain, it was down 85% of what it was in 1950.
In Britain or America?
And in Britain. America was 75% down. So in other words, the men are only 25% fertile as they were, as opposed to 1950. And the UN gives these statements every year. They never qualify it with a comment as why they're doing this study, or why. You would think, for instance, they would say this is a crisis situation, but they
yes.
don't.
Yes.
And that's the telltale that this is an agenda that it's being caused by probably the inoculations, I think, primarily. And since the polio vaccines began in the 50s, by Dr. Salk. Now, Dr. Salk is known, as I say, for the polio vaccine. He's lauded as a hero. And yet, when you go into the history books about this man, he belonged to the World Eugenics Society. He believed in survival of the fittest. And he was all for eradicating the common person because he said, in the future to come, we won't need all these laborer workers.
And that is
the
truth.
And he said, there are too many of them, and they'll have to be eliminated.
Oh, Jesus.
And this is the guy that comes forth with a vaccine to save us.
Yes, and tell our listeners what you heard him say on the television at a round table.
Yes, this was a CBC documentary, in fact, on him. And they showed you old 8mm clips where he's talking about, he's standing in his white coat with a couple of his partners, and he said, oh yes, he says, we did know, he said, that there were over 100 simian or monkey viruses in each polio shot, he said, but we thought it outweighed the risks, you know, the benefits would outweigh the risks. And he said, we did know that the simian 40 virus, that's just a numbering system to identify the particular one, and this is the 40th virus they identified that everybody got, had one function, and that was to cause cancerous tumors.
Brain tumors.
So they knew all of this.
I thought you said brain tumors.
No, it's all cancer.
Oh, just cancer tumors, period.
Yeah. And so they knew this. This comes from a man who in his own circle was better known for his speeches on eugenics and population control. And yet they conned the whole Western world into taking this shot. And now we find that most men are almost sterile.
Well, I'll tell you what a lot of that probably has to do with, too, is the estrogen dominance.
That's a plus factor.
Because according to Kurt Newby, and his information comes basically from Dr. John Lee, there are 60,000 sources today of xenoestrogen. And xenoestrogen, folks, is an artificial estrogen, but the estrogen dominance causes femininity in men. It causes infertility. It causes women to have endometriosis. In fact, one of the reports that I found on this, Alan, came from a Canadian doctor. And what was amazing to me is that he said for the past 50 years, and you remember, what's his name, Charles Galton Darwin's book, In the Next Million Years, that was done in the 50s.
Yep.
And he was talking about the use of the hormones and how they would change the people.
Well, yeah, if you want to pacify aggressive males who might just upset the apple cart during massive changes, you stop them from being aggressive males and you make them effeminate.
Yeah.
And that's been done.
But it's also causing, okay, look at what else it's causing. Besides instability in the male, the low sperm count, they said that the incidence of total hysterectomies in Britain is high only just behind the U.S. And they said something like 40-some percent of women will wind up getting total hysterectomies and not even having to if they had their hormones balanced.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the men losing their sperm count, and you got the women having their reproductive organs taken out, Alan.
Yeah, and you got population control.
No lie.
Mm-hmm.
Population control.
And of
control,
course, what they didn't, and they never do, promote through any of the Hollywood movies or the sexual educational programs, is the fact that most women are becoming infertile through their fallopian tubes being infected with chlamydia, which is a long, long-acting infection.
And it's sexually transmitted.
Sexually transmitted,
yes.
And so many men have it and don't know they've got it, because in the man, he has a very mild warming, not a burning, on a urination, and he'll think nothing of it. and so many, in fact, we did a survey in Toronto as being an average Western city. I did a survey about a year ago, and they found that about 60% of women 25 and under were carrying one or more sexually transmitted diseases.
Oh, my God.
Because they're so promiscuous. That's the new norm, you see.
Well, they've covered their bases.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they just don't miss a lick, Alan.
No, they don't. It's total warfare on the public. And it always has been. Only now, at least since in this the last century, they stepped up the scientific techniques to accomplish it. I mean, Procter & Gamble admitted... here's another thing. They promoted stopping using... don't breastfeed your children. And they came out with the oyster milk, they called it, over in Europe. And of course, the big pull again was to women's vanity. Your breasts won't sag so much if you don't breastfeed your children. And so many children lost out on the kicking off, the starting off of their immune system.
Oh, yeah,
they got from their mother's milk.
The start kick, huh?
And then Procter & Gamble promoted the other big thing. Well, babies need special food now, you see. I don't know how we managed for thousands of years without Procter & Gamble. And they were using a sterilization agent, a fluid, to wash out the jars before they put the baby food in it. And it just turns out that years later they find out that it's also an artificial form of estrogen, a synthetic estrogen.
That they were using.
And you didn't know that at the time.
Yeah, well...
And sure, you have all these effeminate males now.
Right, and for
so
our...
this is a plan.
I wanted to say this, too, for our listeners. Folks, plastics. In fact, in the book, Jewish Persecution, in the preface of the book, I added this information, and Darren has already put it in, about what Alan and I are talking about, and it gives you just a little list there of sources of the xenoestrogens, and basically we spray it in our rooms, we spray it in the air, we brush with it, we smell it, we sleep with it, we live with it, we slather it on our bodies. It's just about in everything. And you should really go into sweetliberty.org, go into the preface. Actually, you'll see it'll say introduction, and right after the introduction is the preface. This information is there. And we also, Alan, I wanted to say this. I thought about it while you were talking. We talked about this a long time ago, and I read to our listeners a report titled The Denormalization of America or the Population. And this was an extremely researched. I went into probably two-thirds of the sources that this article gave, and they were there, you know, the source, scientific journals and et cetera. And I wanted our listeners to know, folks, that is online now and on sweetliberty.org. It'll be in probably the health med section, but it'll be on the main page too in newest items. So be sure to check that out. Alan, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't... I just wanted our listeners...
These books to sell, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, give our listeners your address.
Yeah, they're called Cutting Through, and there's one, two, and three. There's three of them. They're $25 each, and that's in a U.S. International postal order from your post office.
No personal
check.
If chance.
You want one or all of them, send the postal order to Alan Watt, which is W-A-T-T. That's Site 41, S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Estaire, E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1.
Right.
Or call me at 705-695-0416, and I'll send them out to you when you order them.
There you go. I want to do your address one more time. Folks, it's Alan Watt, W-A-T-T, Site, S-I-T-E, Site 41, Box 4. You were going a little fast there, Alan. Estaire, E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Estaire, Ontario. And the postal code is P as in Peter, 3, E in Elizabeth, 4. E3, it's P3E4N as in Nora, 1. P3E4N1, Canada. And be sure that you put your full name and address and return address on it, or they won't deliver your mail. And once again, as Alan said, international postal money order or cash, but no personal check or U.S. postal money order, or he can't use it, folks. And the books are certainly, definitely worth having. Basically, what it does is it's based on information that Alan shared with us over a couple or 3 years, and confirmation of the information that he has given us. And I say that he brought us out of the dark ages. He brought us out of the forest so that we could see the trees. And it's not been a happy or easy ride, folks. I will admit that. And I think about you. I mean, Alan, I just finished those three chapters of the book.
Uh-huh.
And I was in a funk that was not good. And I realized I literally was just emotionally exhausted. And it was discovering the details of the things that you had already told us, but it was in a general way. Mm-hmm. And to be able to look behind the scenes and see all of the players, and it was almost overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
And I think about our listeners, and I think about the people who read the book that is online there, Jewish Persecution. I think about them and how they feel. And folks, just know that, I don't know, rather than bemoaning all of what we're learning, maybe give thanks that we are coming closer to the truth than we've ever been in this lifetime. We'll be back with you tomorrow night. Thank you for being here, Alan Watt. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
As always, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and God bless you.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Be sure to listen to The Church at Kaweah every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Pacific Time. The Church at